This is WABF 1480. And it's time now for the Conservative Watchdog Weekly News Review with Dr. Lou Campomenosi, president of the Common Sense Campaign and adjunct professor of political science at Spring Hill College. The Conservative Watchdog Weekly News Review is paid for by Spriggs Enterprises, featuring the Shell gas stations in Daphne on 90 and 98 and in Malbus on 181. And good morning, Dr. Lou.
Well, hello to you there, Laurie. Another great weekend. Spring was here. I actually paid a lot of money to get the newspaper because they had a spring special in there. I'm
is
thinking to
true?
Myself, you've got to be kidding me. I bought it anyway.
Is it true the Mobile Sunday paper is now $7.99? Is that true?
It was for this weekend because they had this special about spring in there.
I see.
That cost us more money. So at any rate, so we had a wonderful weekend. No question about that. Daylight savings did not adversely affect us. It looks like we're here bright and
feeling good,
bushy-tailed. So here we go. All right, so despite the fact that we had a beautiful spring weekend, there's nothing beautiful about what's going on in the country under the O'Biden.
No.
It's Obama and Biden.
That's got a ring to it.
That was a slip, but nevertheless, it was a good slip. So, I mean, what are we supposed to be happy about with this Obama? Good God, now I'm frozen. It really is Monday.
Okay. O'Biden. Coin the phrase.
Administration. I mean, just think about it. And as you think about it, frame it along the lines of how just a few months ago, let's look at the border crisis first. Just a few months ago, the border was fine, okay? Trump had done what he had to do to sort things out. He got an incredible deal with the Mexicans to hold these asylum seekers in Mexico. Do you understand how difficult that was going to be for them to negotiate something like that? That just didn't happen, you know, given the fact that the new Mexican president was a socialist. He and Trump did not necessarily have a lot of agreement, and yet Trump worked the art of the deal and made it happen. And that really took the pressure off of the border, along with the wall being completed for about 450 miles. All in all, the lessons were clear. You have to do something other than what Obama was doing in order to have a secure border. And yet, Nancy Pelosi has the audacity to say that they inherited a mess on the border. And I mean, we're watching this and thinking, how can she possibly say it? And of course, the answer is pretty clear. They will lie and say anything they have to do in order to make sure that the Obama legacy is destroyed. And that's exactly what they're doing. So you know, here again, I get back to these fundamental questions about, okay, you've got the Obama administration doing things, and we've talked about any number of them, okay? And I've just mentioned the border. But when you look at the other things that he's doing, okay, and again, the House is pushing this, and one certainly has to feel that Pelosi and Schumer are really the presidents in charge, co-presidents, however you want to put it. And Biden is just signing the stuff that comes, that they send to him, along with Kamala Harris. So you have this issue about the border, which they have blown up. And all the statistics show it's a crisis. So they don't want to admit that. And so you have to ask, well, why is it that they are hesitating to deal with this? And the short answer is, this is what they want. They want these illegals to come into the country. They want to be able to get them to a pathway to citizen, and HR, they have a bill on this, and it's basically going to put these illegals into a path to become a citizen within 8 years. 5 years of preliminaries, 3 years of real testing, and the next thing you know, you are a citizen. Now, the last time they tried to do things like this was the Gang of Eight with Rubio's bill, which had a 14-year process in order to become a citizen. It had a high standard of performance, you know, no felonies, no crime, had a job, education, blah, blah, blah. That went nowhere then. And I would suggest to you that we hope that the Senate will stop this, because this would require, you know, a filibuster to stop it. And more than likely, that 60-vote threshold is not going to be met, because the Republicans will stick together on this particular issue. So we'll see what happens on that. But think about this. You've got this border question that you have the underlying motivation to make sure that 11 to 20 million illegals become Democrats. That's all they want. And I think that it's incumbent upon the Republicans to stick together and fight this in the Senate. You can't fight it in the House because, you know, they have a slim majority, but it's enough for them to get what they want. It's not the case in the Senate. It's incumbent upon us, I would argue, to press hard to Shelby and to Tuberville to make sure that they do everything they can to work with their fellow senators who feel the same way, and that the RINOs get the message. You cross us on this one and you're toast. Nothing will ever come, and Shelby can do this because of his position, you know, in the Senate. They can control where the money goes. And if these RINOs are willing to pay the price of being cut off from anything, well, then let them go ahead and do it. So here you have the border issue. Here's another wonderful thing to get you all, you know, motivated about. This H.R. 1, we've talked about it before. H.R. 1 fundamentally does something which I don't think any House bill or Senate bill has ever tried to do, which is essentially to take over the election system in the country. The U.S. Constitution gives the states the right to do exactly what they're doing. They run elections. Now, we all know what happened in 2020. And let me phrase it this way. There are those on the left that argue that there was no election fraud, there was nothing wrong, the election was fair, Biden won fair and square. Now, I've suggested to you that we can argue on the margins about fraud and all the rest of that stuff, the dead voting and all like that. I think that there's a strong case that can be made about that. But the strongest case, the case that makes the most sense, and the case that gives us hope that we can prevail, is the unconstitutional changes made to state election laws by Democratic secretaries of state and Democratic governors, excuse me, along with changes pushed by courts, such as what Stacey Abrams was able to do in Georgia with the consent decree that essentially opened up the floodgates for mail-in ballot corruption. Now, it's hard to argue the merits of what I've just suggested to you. But notice there is a critical element that was missing in Georgia that we saw in Alabama, and that's leadership. Our leaders, Attorney General Marshall and Secretary of State Merrill, did not accept the lawsuit that the Southern Poverty Law Center filed. They fought it, and they won in the Supreme Court, which meant that the election integrity in Alabama was safe. In Georgia, you didn't have that happen. And that inevitably brings about these questions about why did Governor Kemp not fight the consent decree, especially after Trump was instrumental in helping him get elected against Stacey Abrams 2 years ago, or 3 years ago now. I mean, start thinking about the reasons for that. And in the end, it takes me back to Kemp's decision to accept the Dominion voting machines. Everyone knew Dominion machines were poison. Texas in 2019 had said no to them. Amy Klobuchar and a couple of other Democrat senators had cautioned about using Dominion machines. But for me, for Kemp to go and take Dominion in the face of Texas's absolute rejection of it tells me something was going on there. Now, what was that something? Well, I think it's pretty clear. Somewhere along the line, Kemp was compromised. Don't know why, over what, but whatever it was, it handcuffed him, particularly in fighting against the consent decree. So here now you have the House trying to pass another one of these bills that essentially will take all of the problems you saw in 2020 and bless them so that the future of all elections is in jeopardy. There will be no election integrity. And if that's their aim, H.R. 1 gets them to the goal. And that's why the argument along these lines is that we have got to make sure that the Senate holds and that they peel off one or two Democratic senators. Manchin most likely. But, I mean, Manchin just went along with another big bill. So the hope that Manchin was going to be stopping the $1.9 trillion bailout to the blue states, I mean, he just caved in on that. He's publicly said that he would stop on certain lines. He wouldn't go along the lines with dealing with the filibuster or packing the court. And those are all good. But you know what? You know, it's easy to say stuff. It's a little bit harder to live up to that when you've got pressure on you from your party and that they can weigh in heavily to make sure that your state is penalized if you don't go with the flow. So we'll see how Manchin does. But I would argue that in the end, Manchin has become the most powerful senator since we've seen in many, many, many years. But that power comes with a responsibility. Does he really want to see this country turned into Venezuela or Cuba? Because that's where it's going with what these socialists, radical socialists, are doing in the House. Here's another little one for you. This is the Civic Secures Democracy Act. Now, here again, we get into one of these. I mean, this is an Orwellian approach here. We all know that civics is important. Most of us had civics at one time or another in high school. But with Common Core, civics has been de-emphasized. But now there's an attempt to try to reinvigorate it. But the way they want to reinvigorate it is two parts. One, they want to bring in what's called critical race theory, which I'll talk to you about in a minute. And then the second part of this is that it's called action civics. So play around with that for a second. What do you think action civics means? Lori, you don't have to answer that, but let's just think about it for a second. What do you think action civics means?
Action civics.
Action civics. Frame it along the lines of what leftists do very well. They go out and protest, right? So you're sitting as a little ninth grader, 10th grader, whatever, and your teacher says, okay, your assignment is you've got to go out and organize a protest. Lori's looking at me askance. Yes, Lori.
My jaw is dropping.
Yes, exactly. Okay, so here you have a situation where Action Civics, your grade is going to depend upon what you do as a protest. Okay? Okay, folks, I mean, what we're looking at here is essentially Common Core on steroids. And we've had discussions about what Common Core has done in terms of math and English. And in many ways, what we have already seen in terms of how they have just corrupted social studies to the point where the 1619 project is being embedded into American history, all right? There's no question that the attempts to fight the culture wars in the education of our kids is exactly where the war has to be won. Because if we don't win this part of the war, these kids are going to grow up like AOC. Now, someone said to me last time we were talking about this, well, she was too old to be Common Core. Well, that may be true, but all you have to do is just go to your college and you're going to see Common Core on steroids there. It's been in the academic world that has created the anti-American, the higher academic world that's created the anti-American climate, which I've suggested to you, basically says this country is racist, it's imperialist, it's homophobic, and it is misogynist. That's the theory, okay? And they have perpetuated that theory over, I would say, a 40-year span. And so AOC is going to pop out of Columbia spouting all that crap. There's no question about that. She didn't need to get it in high school. It's there in college. I would suggest to you, though, that this generation that's in college and in high school, and some of them who have graduated over the last 5 years, they were indoctrinated in Common Core thinking. And that Common Core thinking was not just along the lines of anti-Americanism, but in terms of indoctrination, where the counselors are indoctrinating these kids on all sorts of left-wing ideas. I mean, there you have it. So when I say that Common Sense Campaign has been fighting this war for the last 10 years, and we're determined to win it, we are going to do what we can do here in Alabama to make sure that we win. And I'll talk more about that in a second when I come to state issues. But for goodness sake, I mean, here's where it helps to have a Jerry Carl in the House, because Jerry Carl is not going to support this. Now, I recognize we have a minority there, so we can't stop them. But Jerry Carl's basic position is he's trying to find Democrats who reside in red states and who had close elections who may very well be, you know, amenable to some sort of a approach that takes you down a road that they will say no to what's going on in their party. We'll see how that works itself out. But this is one of those things where Common Sense Campaign will keep you all informed. Just go to our website, commonsensecampaign.org, and you'll find out information about what you can do to go forward in terms of dealing with this. Okay? Let me touch on one more thing before I go to state issues, all right? And that's this foreign policy question about China. Here again, fundamentally, you have to ask the question, what will Biden do when a crisis erupts with China over XYZ, okay? We know the relationship that China has with Hunter Biden. We know the relationship China has with the rest of the Biden family. We're pretty sure that Uncle Joe Biden is getting cut into the money that the rest of the family is making based on the documents we all saw that came out of the investigations into the laptop that the idiot Hunter left in some store in Delaware. All right. So we know that there is a compromising situation that's there. So look at what China did with Hong Kong, okay? They shut down the demonstrators. They took away, with their new legislation, any type of free government in Hong Kong, despite the fact that they had signed a deal with the Brits many years ago so that Hong Kong would remain relatively free well after the document, I think it was a 50-year agreement signed in 1998 or something like that, okay? The date isn't as important as the fact that the Chinese went against it a lot earlier than most people thought. And why is that? Because freedom is an infectious disease to the Chinese Communist Party. And Hong Kong had to be taken care of. It is now squashed. It is under the thumb of the mainland government. But guess what, folks? The real problem is Taiwan. Taiwan's 27 million Chinese. Well, they're a mixture of Taiwanese, but for the most part, you now have Taiwan as nominally a part of China. That's what the Chinese have always proclaimed. And I would suggest to you that given Taiwan's importance, they are a major producer of, you know, serious issues such as chips that are critical towards any kind of technological advances. They are absolutely in front of the world in terms of combating COVID, okay? There are no cases of COVID there. No cases. Amazing, isn't it?
Isn't Taiwan also the country that requires the vaccine and proof of it on your cell phone in order to attend a public gathering of any sort or go to a movie?
Right. But the big thing they do is that they have quarantined anyone who comes into the country, no matter what, okay, whether you've got a shot, vaccine, or not. The bottom line is that Taiwan represents not just a threat because of the freedom that Taiwan exhibits, but it is a threat because they are armed, they can withstand a Chinese invasion, and they've got the United States. Aha, now there's a key thing here. The United States is on the side of the Taiwanese. Now, will Biden stand by our agreements to protect China? I mean, to protect Taiwan? We're going to see when this is tested, because the Chinese do not want Taiwan, and they will follow the same pattern they did with where they are in Hong Kong. That's what's coming, okay? So you all remember, you heard it first here with old Dr. Liu, all right? But it's not going to be fun, folks, because if Biden caves on Taiwan, the rest of Asia will get the message. No longer will the United States be seen as a power to protect them. And so all of this trade that you see that we have with Japan, with Vietnam, all of those places, the Australians are going to easily fall in line. And, you know, run the reel back to World War II. The Australians were very lucky that the Japanese were stopped before they came to Australia. And that's because the Americans were able to win at Guadalcanal and break the Japanese string of victories. When Singapore fell, Australia was next, okay? The same thing happened in 1965 when the Indonesian government broke the back of the Communist Party. Australia was very much concerned about communism spreading to Australia via the same way the Japanese did, coming down with their military forces able to get in there. The bottom line here is if China does what it wants in the rest of Asia, Australia is going right under. There's already one of their areas, Queensland, that is pretty much under the thumb of the Chinese communists because they have bought and paid for some of the representatives who run that particular area. So all I'm saying, folks, is there's going to be a clash sooner rather than later, not if, but when. And when that happens, we're going to be tested to the utmost because the Chinese want world domination, We are in the way, and Joe Biden is not the instrument to stand up, as Churchill did, and say, not only no, but hell no.